Hello, VetBlast podcast listeners. Did you know that you can earn 0.25 CE credits with this podcast? After listening to this podcast, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select the podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We want to give a big shout out to our friends at SIVA for sponsoring this podcast. And guess what? We are going to be talking about Panaquil CA1 and its role in the management of acute pancreatitis. And joining us is our wonderful colleague, Dr. Harry Cridge. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, listen, this is so cool about veterinary medicine, how things evolve and change, and we're learning all the latest and greatest in medicine. So looking forward to this discussion. So to our listeners, Dr. Cridge is an ACVIM and ECVIM board-certified internal medicine specialist with clinical and research interests in disorders of the exocrine pancreas. He's one of three RCVS regionized specialists in small animal medicine, gastroenterology worldwide. Dr. Cridge obtained his veterinary medical degree from University College Dublin before moving to the United States to pursue an internship and small animal internal medicine residency at Mississippi State University. Following residency, he joined the faculty at Michigan State University, where he is an associate professor, and he has published in multiple prestigious journals and textbooks. So, all right, well, let's get into it. We have a lot to chat about with pancreatitis because it can be such a frustrating disease for the general practitioner. And we often see our suspect pancreatitis in our patients, but often it can be difficult to get a diagnosis. So how do you recommend the GP to diagnose it? And are there any updates in how it's diagnosed?
Yeah, so the diagnosis of pancreatitis is, you know, notoriously challenging. Historically, people used to rely on, you know, pancreatic biopsy, but that's fallen by the wayside for many years, given how invasive it is, the costs, and quite frankly, the poor anesthetic stability of these patients. So what that has done for us as a profession is it's meant that we're really reliant on combining data from multiple different sources, so history, physical, imaging ideally, and a pancreatic lipase test. And that's fantastic because it means that, you know, ultimately we are an integral part of that diagnosis and we can't, you know, find an answer on a single diagnostic test. But it does mean that we have to be pretty cognizant of some of the limitations of each of those diagnostic tests to make sure that we interpret them correctly for the best use of our patients. I think one of the biggest things we also have to think about as we approach these cases is, you know, ultimately, what is our goal? You know, we have a patient in front of us and we want to rule out something that would require treatment other than medical management. And in those cases, you know, we may be reliant on history, signalment, physical exam findings, finding that vomiting, that cranial abdominal pain, and an x-ray to rule out, you know, a foreign body or something that we wouldn't want to miss. And that may be sufficient for some cases, but those cases that don't respond correctly or those cases that, you know, a little bit more challenging, we really do need to get more information on those. A pancreatic lipase test, and we'll talk a little bit about the patient side tests we have available and the send out tests, but also getting imaging and really trying to integrate all of that information together into our answer.
You know, when the first thing I tend to do is do this SNAP test, I know many of our listeners probably do that too. And you're always curious, is like, is there something else going on to your point? So how often do you see a positive SNAP test, but worry about it being, say, something else in addition to the pancreatitis?
When we think about the SNAP test that we all use patient side, it's designed to be really sensitive, but only moderately specific. So what that means for a clinician is if you have a negative SNAP, the animal, you know, is unlikely to have pancreatitis. But a positive SNAP, it does increase our clinical suspicion for pancreatitis. But it doesn't mean that, you know, there's not something else going on that is the cause of the clinical signs. There's been a lot of different studies that have looked at, you know, the accuracy of this test. And it's always really hard because the numbers vary significantly between study designs and also what the authors use to say what pancreatitis is. The way I like to think of it is, know, this is an indicator that pancreatic lipase is at least somewhat elevated. And that may be because of pancreatitis is the primary disorder. But we also have to remember the pancreas can get injured or take a hit from other systemic diseases as well. So that positive on the stat test does indicate some level of damage or inflammatory injury to the pancreas, but it doesn't say for sure that it is the primary cause of the clinical signs. It could be secondary elevations because there's, you know, a foreign body or a GDV or peritonitis that's also irritating the pancreas. And that's why we need to use that in conjunction with imaging to make sure we're interpreting it correctly.
Okay, understood. And let's talk about the acute pancreatitis and the standard of care for dogs. You know, what tends to be the current standard of care that we see with these kinds of dogs?
Yeah, so the predominant parts of the medical management of pancreatitis are going to be correcting hydration, providing early nutrition to keep those enterocytes happy, and also analgesia. And then, you know, as we move on into this podcast, we're likely going to talk about Panaquil, which is, you know, one of the new drugs on the block, which is really exciting to help manage these cases.
Yeah. And yes, you definitely mentioned pain. And how often do you suspect these pets to be in pain when we suspect pancreatitis?
Yeah. So I think when we think about pancreatitis, we should predominantly think that this is a painful disorder. One of the challenges can be, you know, in dogs is that they can be pretty stoic. So when we look at literature that looks at, you know, the prevalence of clinical signs in dogs with elevated pancreatic lipase concentrations, we did a study just last year, and the actual number of dogs where there's pain recorded in the medical record is actually lower than you would anticipate. What I would say to that is it's not the fact these dogs aren't painful, it's the fact that it's really hard to detect pain in these dogs, particularly in the emergency setting when, you know, the animal is doing really, really poorly and we're focusing on stabilizing that patient. So if we diagnose pancreatitis, assume it is painful, even if you don't get marked cranial abdominal pain. And sometimes you can see response to those pain medications via looking at, you know, blood pressure and heart rate and other indicators of, you know, potential pain.
All right. And do you happen to have a preference in pain medication for these pets?
Yeah, so currently the gold standard is going to be opioid analgesia. And that's because twofold. One, it's a really high quality analgesic. And secondly, because one of the other analgesics that we use in veterinary medicine is nonsteroidals. And right now we suspect that the adverse GI effects from those drugs and the potential to reduce pancreatic perfusion would be, you know, harmful in these patients. So we stay away from NSAIDs and we prefer opioids.
And let's chat about chatting with the pet parent about this when you're suspecting pancreatitis. And, you know, I think a lot of the pet parents want to know what the prognosis is, what's the treatment plan. So how do you talk to the pet owner to discuss prognosis of this disease?
Yeah, so prognosis is, again, it's another challenging part of pancreatitis and what makes this, you know, very interesting disorder and, you know, quite frankly, somewhat of a frustrating disorder for vets in practice is because there are a lot of different prognostic scales that exist in veterinary medicine. And, you know, in my opinion, most of them are only really valuable on the research basis when you're looking at many, many dogs. Few of them, you know, provide true indicators of prognosis in the individual patient outside of the populations that they were studied in. So I try to focus on 24 hours at once, particularly those dogs that come in, you know, severely affected. We really need to see how they respond to therapy within the first 24 to 48 hours to see how they're going to do. Ultimately, if they develop a secondary complication to pancreatitis, like acute kidney injury, acute lung injury, you know, it's likely that those dogs are going to have a worse prognosis than a dog that, you know, we can get on top of its hydration, we can get on top of its pain, and then it starts eating, you know, over the next few days. That dog has a very different prognosis than the dog that has developed those secondary complications. And I think the other thing that we do have to take a moment to mention is a lot of these dogs that develop pancreatitis are going to develop it again in the future. So at least, you know, discussing that with the owners is, you know, this is a disorder that while we're focused on getting over this immediate crisis, there may be things that we need to do long-term to reduce the recurrence, and we may get into this situation again, even despite our best efforts.
And you just mentioned acute kidney injury as, you know, a progression. Yeah, and I'm curious too, so why can it progress? Why can pancreatitis progress to that extreme?
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things here is it's such a marked inflammatory disease, and the cytokine response can affect the whole body. So acute kidney injury is one of the things that is commonly out in the literature because it's very easy to detect. But we also have data to show that there are increased cardiac biomarkers in these patients. There's, you know, a lot of pulmonary changes that occur in these patients. So these dogs truly are systemically affected by this disease, and it's likely related to that marked cytokine response that we see in these dogs.
And I'm assuming there's a significant neutrophilic inflammation as well when this happens?
Exactly. So one of the other predominant things that occurs in pancreatitis is this neutrophilic response occurs everywhere. So you can see this throughout the body. And this is sort of part of that systemic inflammatory response.
So speaking of neutrophilic inflammation in the pancreas, which is specific to acute pancreatitis, there is a new class of drug that accomplishes that. So can you tell me a little bit how this class works and how it fits into everyday management of acute pancreatitis in clinical practice?
Yeah, so Panacrel CA1, which is the new drug that's, you know, marketed and distributed through SIVA, has, you know, conditional approval for management of clinical signs associated with the acute onset of pancreatitis in dogs. And this is, you know, a really novel drug and a novel mechanism of action that's new to the market. So the way it works is, like you mentioned, it affects neutrophilic inflammation. And it does that by affecting how the neutrophil gets into the tissue. So thinking back to vet school, neutrophils, you know, they go from the blood into the tissue through a series of events, which is the rolling, the activation, and the adhesion and migration of that neutrophil from the blood vessel into the tissues. And one of the key players in that pathway is something called leukocyte function associated antigen 1, or LFA1, and that interacts with ICAM-1 on the surface of the endothelium, and that allows that process to occur. So Panacrel CO1 is a drug that is an LFA1 activator inhibitor. So ultimately, it is preventing that movement of that neutrophil from the vessel into the tissues and preventing that neutrophilic inflammation in the tissues.
It's pretty impressive. So when would you recommend, you know, the ER or the general practitioner vets out there to reach for Panacrel CA1? Is this like a drug that they have to be hospitalized to use?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the way that the drug is, you know, provided to a veterinarian is it's a lyophilized powder that's reconstituted with a sterile diluent, and it's injected IV once daily for 3 days. And it's a multi-dose vial. And it's stable for up to about 28 days in the fridge. The good news about that is there's nothing that means that that animal has to be hospitalized between those injections. So one of the ways that I think this may be a useful drug is, you know, as we think about how our hospitals function and some of the challenges associated with keeping animals in the hospital, this may be a drug that allows us to try more outpatient therapy in some of those more mild to moderate cases.
And are there any contraindications in using it?
Yeah, so as with any drug, if the animal has a known, you know, hypersensitivity to that drug, we of course don't want to use it again. That's the main labeled contraindication on Panacrel CA1 right now. The other things that we have to think about is it's not been tested in all study populations, and one of those populations, dogs less than 6 months of age. So we likely avoid it in those populations too. But right now, the biggest one, the one on the label, is the known hypersensitivity.
And when would you avoid using it?
Yeah, so again, those dogs that do have those known allergic reactions, young dogs or dogs with other disorders going on where you may want neutrophil extravasation. But right now, based on the data that we have, it looks like it is going to be a drug that helps with those clinical signs. And again, you know, as more and more data comes out, the more and more we know about when to use this drug.
And are there any adverse effects to Panacrel CA1?
Yes, I think that's a really great question. With any new drugs on the market, we have to think about, you know, of course, all the wonderful benefits that we get, but we also need to think about, you know, what potential adverse effects may exist, as with all drugs. So there's a couple areas that we can look at to try and get more information on this, and that is any adverse events that were reported in the field trials, and also looking at the target animal species safety data. And both of those are reported in the Freedom of Information summary for this particular drug that is available to everybody on the FDA website. when we look at the adverse events that were reported in the field trial, I think it's really important to think about, you know, how we look at this data. The way that it occurs is every adverse event that was reported is you know, of course, documented because it's a new drug. So the best way we can look at that is we can look at, you know, the patient population that received the drug and then the patient population that did not receive the drug and look at the differences in the frequency about adverse events. Some of the adverse events that are reported in that Freedom of Information summary include things like anorexia, digestive tract disorders, that may be things like nausea. They occurred in both populations, albeit with a slightly higher frequency in the Panaquil group. Those are the various adverse events that were reported too, such as diarrhea, respiratory tract disorders. And again, these could be related to the underlying disease or administration of the drug. So the more we use this drug, I'm sure we're going to get a better idea of that safety profile. The other thing we can look at, like I mentioned, is that target animal species safety study. So this is something that the drug company does where they purposefully give the drug at a higher dose and for a greater frequency than what is recommended on the label. And they do this in beagles and they look at what happens. They give 2 mg/kg of this drug, which is a 5 times overdose, and they give it for 9 days instead of 3 days. And in the Panaquil group or the Fusoplatid group, they did see hypersalivation in 2 dogs compared to 1 dog in the control group. They did note an injection site pain, although there was a catheter issue. But one of the things they did see is that there was a higher frequency of hypertension or high blood pressure in those dogs that received really high doses of this drug, although it was seen at a fairly low frequency in dogs that were dosed at the standard dose of the drug.
Great. Perfect. You must be excited because this is your wheelhouse and expertise area. So I'm just curious, because as someone who studies the pancreas and does a lot of research in them, what does this mean to you and also to our patients?
Yeah, I think it's a huge, you know, innovation in the area. For a very long time, we've been sort of restricted to providing supportive and symptomatic care, you know, and in spite of that, in some populations, the morbidity and mortality with pancreatitis has been really high, despite everybody's best efforts. So it's really exciting to have another potential player on the block to help with these cases. And I think it's, you know, moving us towards an area where we can do targeted therapy rather than, you know, applying band-aids to these patients and giving them time and support and hope that they get better.
I love that you said targeted therapy, because it's exactly how I think of this too, is like you really are, you know, matching the drug to the treatment, which is fantastic. So excellent. This is wonderful. Well, Dr. Harry Critch, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And thank you again to our friends at Siva for sponsoring this. Don't forget to rate this podcast. As always, it helps us out significantly. And we will see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.